So welcome everybody to the Lighthouse London podcast. Thanks for tuning in. It's Tom in the hot seat today, and I'm joined by another Tom. Hello.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Tom. This is Tom Wright from Friends of the Earth. I believe you're a member of the Digital Transformation team, is that right?
I am. I've got a funky job title of the Digital Change Agent. Nice. So it's a dedicated role that was set up 9 months ago to try and bring some more capacity to our digital transformation team. My background is not in digital, so it's really interesting to be sat here talking about digital
stuff. What did you do before?
So my background is really in activism, getting people to do stuff, working with voluntary groups. I joined Friends of the Earth about 9 years ago. Most of my time has been spent working on what we call our activism team. So working with community groups around the country, trying to get out what we call our big national campaigns to make sure they translate at a local level. Or working with supporters who might take out e-actions online, so digital, that kind of digital activism, but not necessarily digital products and things like that.
Nice. So the kind of team you're in, I hear this kind of digital change thing talked about quite a lot, especially in charities at the moment. We're working with some other charities to do similar stuff. How did this come about at Friends of the Earth, and why did that team get put in place?
We set up a dedicated digital transformation team in 2014. So it was a very clear move from the senior management within organisations, that they wanted to embed that within our organisational strategy. They wanted to put capacity and time and people into it and actually, you know, make a shift. I think there's a number of reasons. I think the one that's that sticks out to me in terms from talking to other people in the sector is this idea that we were really aware that if we don't get on the digital bandwagon, to use a corny phrase, we're in trouble. There's a really interesting piece that's written by a friend of mine called Julius, who heads up the Digital Charities Forum, and it's called Digital, Digital, Digital or Death. And there's bits and paragraphs in it that talk about, you know, the risk to the charity sector, that the charity sector is quite generally conservative and risk averse and doesn't like change, and we're wedded to a lot of models out there that are potentially coming to the end of their life, right? Yeah. And monthly giving, monthly donations, and the way that we campaign. And I think Friends of the Earth, particularly at senior or management level and throughout the organization, are very clear that we don't want to end up being a Kodak, sure, or a Blockbuster. And if we don't start to spend some time looking at how to innovate, how to use digital properly and talk to people where they're at, we'd be in trouble. So I'd say we're a disruptive campaigning organization. We always have been. So
yep.
The first thing we really did of note was back in, I think it was 69 or 70, we took a load of reusable glass bottles and dumped them outside Schweppes, the drink maker outside their HQ, to essentially disrupt the status quo and say, look, you guys have got to do something more about recycling. You can't just go and throw this stuff away.
Yep.
And we used that model pretty effectively through the 80s and 90s, but times have changed. There's a couple of things that spring to mind when I think, why have we done it? One's around our local group model. So we have a model of how we organize at a local level. And traditionally in the past, that's been a community group coming together, maybe once a month, very traditional method, meet once a month, decide on running a store, running an action. And that's not how people organize these days.
No, of course
not. That model
not.
Doesn't work. So I think we're really aware as an organization that if we're in danger of becoming obsolete, like a lot of charities, so there's a very clear steer from above and throughout the organisation cascading down that we have to get this stuff right.
And that's kind of something you've measured recently. You've seen that falling off, that old way of working is definitely not happening.
It feels like, I think if you look across the sector and talk to people in the sector, they're very aware that ways of campaigning, ways of organising are changing. I haven't personally looked at measurements of how it's tracked, but it feels like that. So I live in Brighton, and I've been involved in Friends of the Earth local groups for the past 9 years. When I used to live in London, I was involved in one, and I'm involved in the Brighton and Hove Friends of the Earth group as outside of my work life. And I've noticed a shift in the last 3 years, at least, of the number of people who are willing to engage in that model of, we meet once a month, we're in a pub or a cafe, we're going to talk through our plans and then we're going to go and do something. We'll come back in a month. People don't associate with themselves like that anymore. They will take a Friends of the Earth petition. They'll sign a 38 degrees petition. They'll take a Sum of Us action. They'll donate to ActionAid. They don't consider themselves a member of anything. They consider themselves, they have an interest in the cause or the ethics or the idea.
So the way people connect with charities is kind of shifting in a way.
I think the perception of charities is shifting. I think it's certainly one of the things that was mentioned last week when I was chatting to colleagues around this was the idea of the fundraising models that we use. They're definitely changing. We've noticed that with one of the companies we've been involved with, our digital startup and residence project, is looking at trying to disrupt and shake up how people give their money on a monthly basis to charities. Instead of saying, I'm going to give X pounds this month to this charity, they're looking at creating a model which says, I can shift and change that every month depending on what I feel like. And this month I might go there, next month I might go over here. But that goes back to some of the aspects around risk averse. And I think as a sector, charities are really, really wary of changing that model of monthly direct debits because that's what they've existed on. And if they get that wrong and those monthly direct debits start dropping, they're in trouble.
Yeah. So you kind of have this team in place. What have you guys been doing since 2014 in the background?
So from the moment we decided to prioritise it, we gave it a name. We called it Digital First.
Nice.
And that's a whole strand of work. It was, so within the organisation, we have a series of what we might call priority projects. There could be a big campaign, there could be a project around a website rebuild or fundraising project, but it was given a priority status within the organisation as Digital First. So essentially the whole organisation was told, this is important, we want you to engage in this. There's been a whole raft of, I call them initiatives to try and engage people in this stuff. So we've looked at a whole skills and development program, so digital training program, looking at everything from minimum viable product to search engine optimization, writing for the web or writing emails, analytics, metrics, measuring, that kind of stuff, digital business models, digital trends, all the kind of things, just essentially offer those opportunities to people to get involved in like formal training.
Nice.
We've done informal things. So we've tried to bring in experts from the outside world to give short talks over lunchtime. So we called them digital lunchtime talks. So we had people talking about digital transformation as a whole, artificial intelligence, how to use Slack, what a social media strategy is. And partly my role within that as a very internal role was to try and bring people to those events and try to get them to listen and try and, you know, take part in them.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, they worked really, really well. Definitely without challenges. We might touch on those at some point. Yeah, they don't come without the challenges. So that was within the organisation. We also tried to get people out of the organisation. So we've run 3 or 4 little field trips. So we went down to the London Fab Lab to look at things like the makerspace movement and 3D printing and laser cutting and that side of stuff.
Yeah.
We took people out to the Science Museum to look at the information age and the big data exhibitions over there. And last month, we went to the Digital Charities Forum, which I mentioned earlier. So that meets once a month, essentially peers coming together. And we looked at content style guidelines. And I've got a plan to kind of push that every month to get people to events like that. So every month is a different topic. So try and find the people in the organization to do that. That kind of thing. So we explored the idea of a podcast and a blog. They haven't quite happened yet, but we'd like to do them.
I'd recommend it.
The mindset, yep. We looked at things like design thinking, looking not just sort of formal training on that, but coaching one of our campaign teams through a process, looking at, you know, how you can use design thinking to get the best from your campaign planning. We've looked at some of the more, I guess, less interesting stuff in terms of intrinsically interesting. We looked at role profiles and job descriptions, trying to embed digital as a thing within those, trying to attract the right people. And then we've looked at trying to bring the organization together for a whole day-long event. So we ran an innovation day last year as part of our kind of end of year. Everybody comes together for what you might call it Christmas or end of year party. So we leaped on that and turned that into our innovation day and ran sessions around idea generation and disruptive innovation and just tried to give people another way to think about this stuff. One of the problems we've come across, I've witnessed, is this idea of a label. We called it Digital First, and immediately people kind of go, well, digital's not in my job title, so what's got this got to do with me?
Got it. That's a lot of stuff you've been doing then.
A heck of a lot of
busy
stuff.
Busy times.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've spent the last month looking at the whole program, particularly the informal things, and saying what's worked, what hasn't worked, impact have we had. And I think a lot of it we'd love to carry on. Some of it's down to capacity. We're a pretty small team. There's only 4 of us, or five if you include me. And in theory, at the end of this month, I'm going back to my old job.
Yep.
So certainly the informal things, things like the talks, the field trips, coaching people through little things, that they've been really appreciated. Whether we'll carry them on the same scale, I'm not sure, but we'd like to try and come up with like a monthly program where every month we're doing something different. We've run things like Digital Trends Club, Digital Leaders Club, just to try and bring people in different ways. So hopefully we'll do one thing at least once a month.
Awesome. I mean, how's it gone down with the majority of people? I mean, it may be a very hard question to answer because everyone's different, right? But
I think it's gone down really well, generally. It's not without its pitfalls, and it's not without problems and sort of hurdles to get over. Generally, I think within the organisation there's an awareness of the reality of today, and that we have to get involved and we have to understand how to get the best of digital. There's always resistance in everything, and the biggest resistance is not with the fact that we're asking people to think about, let's call it, digital in a different way. It's the fact that we're asking them to think differently. It's the cultural and behavioural change. And for someone, whether they've been in a job 9 months or 20 years, we're going to them and saying, actually, we want you to think about doing this in a different way. And in some cases, it's radically different. And that's where the challenge is. Generally, I think everybody knows we need to do it. And if you, everyone I've talked to, and you know, I tell them the story of, you know, Kodak and Blockbuster, who didn't look forwards and assume that their business model would work. If I talk to them and I explain to them that that's what will happen to us as a charity, they go, oh yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
You flip that and you say, well, we want you to do this within your campaign planning process. And sometimes they're a bit like, oh, okay, that's radically different to what I expect you to do. And I use the example of paper products. So for every campaign, we normally produce like a postcard or a booklet or a leaflet. And our traditional method, and I've done this for years myself, is decide what we want. We want a postcard. How many do we want? We want 10,000. Let's print them. Mm-hmm. And trying to explain that to a campaign team who's wedded to that as a methodology and a way to do things, and say, look, guys, we want you to think about what you want. We want you to produce 500, see if they work,
yeah,
iterate
of course.
Nice. Do another one. It might cost you more,
yeah,
but you'll get a better end result in the end, and you'll realise maybe it wasn't quite right, the URL didn't work, or the graphics didn't work. We don't traditionally think along those lines. We tend to think of, what do we need? Produce it. And that, I think, is the biggest challenge.
So introducing like an agile approach to your traditional ways of working. So you say you haven't come from the digital space before. So what have you learned the most?
I'd say I've learned two things of real value to me. One is that you don't actually have to come from a digital background to have a digital job.
Correct.
I spent the last 6 months running what I call a digital startup in residence, to trying to get startups. We offer them free office space in our organization in return for kind of tapping into their expertise. Back in September of last year, I knew diddly squat about startups. I know not. I mean, I feel like I know a little bit now, but people still chuck terms at me like incubator and venture capital, and I'm just, what is that? I don't know. But I've proved I can successfully run a startup in residence and get two startups into the organization and learn and link them up within people within the organization and actually create a real benefit. That's one. I think the other one is actually how hard it is to get people to adapt to doing different things when they're still working on the same model, the same kind of business as usual approach, particularly training. So I've done quite a lot of training. My background is in training and facilitation, and getting people to stop, put down their day-to-day work and go, okay, I'm going to engage in this, I'm going to learn from it, and I'm going to take time to do it properly and do the follow-up. That's proved really hard. I don't think that's proved any harder because we're talking about digital training. Interestingly, I think that's comes across in all our training within the organization, but it's certainly a learning curve for me in terms of how much time and effort you need to put into actually making behavioral change. You cannot just say, come to an hour and a half long session.
Oh, God, no. You've got to carry on doing it.
And I've discovered that that's probably where our failings are, that we haven't done that follow-up.
Got it. So the bigger picture, do you know what the plan is for the future? What are you guys going to do next?
Where we go next, ultimately, I don't think that's down to me, and I find it kind of hard to answer that question. So I'm going to cheat and pinch the answer of Christian, who heads up the digital transformation team, because I think he's in a better place to answer it. I have my own opinion about this, but as I said, in 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going back to my old job. I feel like I know a lot about this, where we're going, but I'm probably not the best person to say whether that stuff's going to happen. We've tried to do a lot of things over the last couple of years. We've tried to build in a mindset of using things like MVP, minimum viable product. We've got an agile practitioners group, so we're trying to choose agile where we can. It doesn't work in all the organization, but it certainly works in project teams, and we've used it to great effect in at least three or four project teams. And we've tried to look at, I guess, testing and improving our current products and services, as well as bringing in new ones. And I'd say that the future holds a blended approach. We're going to do a bit of that. We'll continue to look at what we've already got, but we'll also look at trying to bring in new ones. So for the past 3 to 4 years, my colleague Rita will kill me if I don't get the numbers right, but I think we're in the fourth year of something called the Great British B Count, which is you might call it a citizen science app. It's a smartphone app or a computer app where you go out, you look for bees in your community, you take a picture, you submit the data, and it helps the both the organization and, I guess, scientists create a picture of where bee species are in the country. And we can look and go, we're seeing an increase in the white-tailed bumblebee in northeast England. That's a good sign. Or we're not spotting the tawny mining bee in Cornwall. That's a bit of a problem. Perfect citizen science, but definitely pretty good. And that started out as an idea. We're now in the fourth year of it, and every year we've got better. So we've gone back, looked at the product and gone, okay, we need to tweak it a little bit differently. What can we do this time? How can we make it even more user-friendly? And we've gone this year into launching something similar, but as a product, and it's called the Urban Nature Kit. So it's a fundraising product where we ask you to donate, and in return we'll give you a kit to go and essentially help nature in an urban environment. So seeds, advice, little things that you can do in your garden or your community. And so we launched that this year. I think there's an appeal going out in the next couple of days. But the plan for that will be, right, we'll look at it, we'll review it, and then we'll look at it and maybe launch it again next year. We'll come up with a new iteration of it.
Okay. And how do you come up with the ideas for these things? How do you breed innovation in the organisation?
So I'd say there's a couple of avenues and a couple of different ways. I think personally I feel a slight disconnect to the answer to that question in terms of knowing how, because I think probably my role in the organisation in the past has not been involved in idea generation in any way, shape or form. My colleague Sarah is behind some of the kind of innovative products like the Great British Bee Count and the Urban Nature Kit, and her role is designed very much around trying to innovate on new products. So that side of things, we have a clear role within the organisation. Innovation as an idea, as an organisation, we've tested and tried different ways to do things. So we've looked occasionally in the past at giving people clear free time in their calendar, so inspiration time or innovation time. I think with some success, some failures, we've given it a go, and I think that unless you get that right, it can actually come across, it can fail quite easily. We've certainly tried to give that a go. We've now got Hugh and Miriam, who are job sharing as our directors of disruptive innovations. They're running a project at the moment to essentially crowdsource, consult, and get feedback on ideas for how they might look at disruptive innovation within the organization. They're not actually looking internally. Mm-hmm. They're looking at real things in the outside world. So how we might, let's pick a good example, how we might engage more 18 to 24 year olds to reduce meat consumption within their diet. So that's one thing, real tangible things in the outside world. Mm-hmm. They're deliberately not looking within the organization.
Yeah.
But that might come. Interested to see if it does, because I think it's definitely true that some of the best ideas within our organization have come from people who haven't got necessarily a tangible role within that project or have come up with great ideas.
This may be a hard one to answer, but are there ways you can see an effect that all this work has had on the organization?
I think definitely. Yeah, I can see it. Certainly from my role in the last 9 months, whenever I describe myself to people, I say I am the loud, gobby internal role of the digital transformation team. And that's why I was brought in. I was deliberately brought in because I can be a talkative person, as I'm discovering during this recording of this podcast. So I've definitely noticed, it's anecdotal, but I've noticed within the last 9 months how much people reference the things that I've done. So just the positive feedback around things like, oh, that guy who came in and talked about artificial intelligence, that was amazing. So people telling me these things.
That's great, yeah.
Again, I asked Christian this question because I thought, be interested to see from a position of longevity from him being in the role for a couple of years. And he told me that, for him, he's seen a sort of a marked change at the senior leadership level. So one of our outgoing directors over a year or so ago sort of came to Chris and the digital team and said, look, I want to tell the organization how it is. And Chris and the team coached him through his presentation and essentially told him what to say and said, look, a little bit along the lines of, you guys have got to embrace this and do it well or you're in trouble. And he's noted from his perspective, like a radical, almost overnight change at sort of senior management level. So we've got a CEO who gets it and embraces it, and we've also seen, I think, a marked change in the recruitment at senior leadership level. So we've brought people on board at senior level who are digitally savvy, understand and value the accuracy and the data and getting it right, and intent on pushing that within the organization, which is pretty much a huge change if we get it right.
It sounds massive. I mean, a lot of work's obviously gone into this and kind of sets you up on a very good, clear path for the future. So what are the kind of complexities hurdles that you guys have had to overcome as part of this journey?
There's definitely a few that stick out. I think one of them,
is around people's competing priorities. So their appreciation of what digital is, but their kind of willingness and they're being time poor, so they can't actually spend time thinking about this stuff. And they look at it as a nice to have. It's great you're doing this talk on Slack, but actually I've got to go and do this thing. Yeah. I'm meeting this MP. I think we've struggled a little bit with branding it as with a label as digital first. I think you have to in some ways, but it's interesting that we've now dropped that. And we're now we're trying to progress from digital first, everything's digital first, to actually we're just business as usual. And now it's just, we spent a year and a half telling you it's digital first, and now we're just going to do it.
No, that's just how you work.
Yeah. Definitely a hurdle, but it feels like we're on our way to overcoming that. Yeah, I mean, we haven't stopped campaigning in all of this. So some of it is around, we've got long-term plans for major national campaigns, and trying to shake those up can be quite tricky. So you kind of almost turn around a juggernaut, which can be tricky at times. And as a small team, we kind of lost half of our capacity because we decided to revamp our website. So they went off and did the website and didn't. Well, whether that's digital transformation or not is another question, but they weren't doing what I might call digital transformation work. They were fixing a new website. Right. So definitely some hurdles, but nothing that I would say is insurmountable.
Awesome. Where can people find out more about what you guys are doing online?
So if anyone's interested in finding out more about what we do as an environmental campaigning organisation and making this place a nicer planet to live on for the people on it, we've got a website. So it's www.foe.co.uk. If you're interested in, I guess, the startup side of things, I'd look at www.foe.co.uk/go/startup. Sounds like I've said that a few times. So that's the page about our digital startup in residence.
How about you personally?
So for me, I'm a reluctant user of Twitter. I'm at Hovis21, Hovis like the bread, 21 like the numbers. I'd warn you that I tend to rant about football on there. Don't talk about digital that much, but please feel free to hit me up.
That's all good.
I'm always happy to chat on Twitter.
Get in touch, everyone. Let's have some nice football chats. Awesome, Tom. Thanks very much for coming in. That's been really great to hear what you guys are up to, and you know, all the best of that in the future. I kind of want to check in with you in a bit and see what's going on. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Lots more content on our site. You can go over to wearelighthouse.com/blog for blogs, podcasts, all that stuff. And again, thanks, Tom, for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been brilliant.
Nice one. Until next time, everyone. See you then.